Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Johnny, are you eating ice cream?
I'm eating a dirtbag snow cone, a.k.a. a frozen Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Ooh.
And it's great.
That sounds delicious.
It absolutely is.
Stirred it up so it's like kind of like icy-esque? Or are you just like scraping off chunks of truly frozen shit?
I poured a few into like just a big Ziploc bag. Mm-hmm. And then okay. I just froze it, and it breaks up really easily because the alcohol doesn't
freeze very easily. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So it just has like a snow cone consistency.
Love
cooking
that.
With Johnny.
Yeah.
Dirt bag snow cone.
I know how to make sourdough bread and a
dirt bag snow cone.
I usually have a dirt bag snow cone served to me in a sourdough cup. That's the best way to have it.
That's vile.
So, the fight has ended, but we still need to deal with the fact that there is an enemy ship that the Uhuru has soundly trounced in combat, who attacked you, tried to steal your most valuable cargo, did it by coordinating with traitorous crew members. There needs to be a response to this. I think I'd like to cut to a little bit in the future into Orimar's office. Orimar, I feel like the captain's council might be here, or do you want to be contemplating alone for a second? What's your...
No, I think the council can be here because I need a bit of help. It was all fun and games. I love to sow, hate reaping. I have, you know, exerted a large amount of my self-control and magical energy to turn my left arm into a sword. Now that I have calmed down, I cannot remember what I need to do because this is the thing that Orimar has never done before. So their arm still in the meeting room in Orimar's office is still a bloody sword.
Oh, boy. Yeah, gnarly as hell. Don't worry, it's not all my blood.
And is signing with their free hand.
Oh, my God. It's going to be so hard to talk.
I guess. And we're going to, you know, they're competent enough to be able to sign even with one hand because they tend to do so when they're being casual. So initially you kind of get the impression that they're being very laissez-faire, and then you realize that it's because they can't sign formally with both hands.
This has got to be a huge problem for nonverbal necromancers all the time. Like, a common speech impediment is that you just have a sword, a nasty bone sword for a hand.
You know?
Because you forget after battle.
Mm-hmm.
When you do your cool speech.
One in 15 necromancers suffers from bloody sword hand syndrome. And for just $9.98 a month, you too can support necromancers like these. This is very sad looking Orimar Vale. Anyway. First things first, he says, signing to all three of you being in the room. Very sorry, Gable. In severe circumstances like these, I should be helping to steer the ship, and I left it entirely out under your control. I was too preoccupied to be thinking of other matters. You've handled things astoundingly. Thank you.
We weren't even... I think a mutiny is a unique enough experience where I think that going a little bit off message is fine. Mm-hmm. As far as we know, we didn't... Not a lot happened up top. We had a pretty good time. Everyone's alive. No one got hurt. I did lightning.
I did lightning.
I did lightning. And we still got some bodies in the balloon. But otherwise, A-okay. If there was ever a time where you didn't need to be there, mwah. Mm. Actually, deck is better than when you found it. Somehow it got cleaner.
Orma pauses. I'll think about what that means later. It refers to like bodies in the balloon. He looks. He can't look confused because
don't
his
worry. They are
facial...
being they're being boiled. So don't worry.
The captain nods. Yeah, Jonnet, are you okay?
Wow. I just wow. Everyone. Wow. Did y'all see that the lightning that Gable did?
Yes.
I just
a simple slide, just yes.
Wow. Also, where did that ship come from? Also, we're not going to go back to like we're done with the shit. We're not worried about it following us or anything like that. This is a question for the group.
Oh, I think that it's on the ground and we should be boarding it shortly.
We're gonna board the ship.
Like, kind of TikTok. Let's.
I need to have a conversation with them. Yes, I just wanted to gather my thoughts.
So, Jonnet points to the captain's normal hands, like a conversation, or Jonnet points to his bone hand, or like a conversation.
Orma is kind of like almost, yeah, in response, just kind of puts the sword arm like behind his back, kind of like
Nathan, I would like a flashback.
Mm.
And I would like this again to be a flashback to early in Orimar's career.
Mm-hmm.
This is Orimar being at like 16 years old.
Mm.
He and Calivar are looking pretty rough, worse for wear. The ship, we can tell, is in not great condition, and Orimar is like kind of walking away from the crew with Calvar and Spit at his side. And as they round the corner towards the captain's office, well, we can't just let him get away with this, says Calvar. Spit goes, Captain, I'm not entirely sure what you want to do, but somebody attacks a ship like this, we can't just let him go away. And we see out of one of the porthole windows, a red feather ship is bound to the Uhuru. Mm. It has been boarded. There is smoke billowing up around from cannon fire, but this ship is clearly defeated.
Orma genuinely looks pretty torn up, like emotionally. There is a lot of hard of steeling oneself in handling these kind of life and death situations. I think in their kind of like defecting from the Red Feathers, all they needed to do is care about the survival of themselves. But now we have a ship and a crew. And I think at this point in time, Orimar is like my newfound family. It would be part of that list. And it is no longer a matter of just having to look after himself. He has to look after so many other people. And that the emotional burst of having to look after so many people, and now that has subsided because we've won, Orma's falling apart a little bit. He doesn't really know what to do with himself or how to kind of like compartmentalize the emotional strain of having to kind of do this sort of thing. But he still has things to solve. He still has to be a stony-faced leader because that's what the job requires. And at the moment, at this particular moment in time, he's kind of like, I don't know. I'm just glad we managed to. I'm just glad that we managed to do this without too much, too much spilt blood on either side. Honestly,
Spit puts a hand on Orimar's shoulder and, like, gently ushers him into the captain's quarters and motions for Kalvar to come in and be silent. And Spit closes the door behind them. Captain, you've got about 15 minutes to make a decision.
For fuck's sake, Spit. I'm not mad at you. It's just...
15 minutes, and take what time you need to have those feelings here.
Orimar goes over. I think he's kept some of the... just general metals, medallions, badges, various other bits and pieces that you get for working with the Red Feathers and being an established... He's not big. He wasn't big time, but there's some prestige in what he managed to achieve while working under, and kind of holds one of those keepsakes and looks at it for a while. What the Red Feathers value more than anything else is resources. They take their pride in... their amassing of wealth, and human lives to them also count as wealth. Those human lives are only valuable for the resources that they can provide to. Let's just take everything from them. We leave the crew alive, but there's nothing on the ship that could keep running. No fuel, no food. Take the clothes if you want to. Let them rebuild themselves from scratch. If nothing else, that will take time. Time where we can cement ourselves elsewhere. Time where they can maybe rethink what they want to do with their lives.
And what about the defectors?
I don't want to cage them up. That would make me a hypocrite. They can either roam free in these hostile lands with nothing, or die with perfect allegiance to their own philosophies, I suppose.
No. You see Kalvar. He looks uncomfortable for a minute. He gives you a look that is familiar to you, where you know he is not saying something.
Hmm. I know this burns inside of you the same way it does for me, which in a meta sense we know is not true. But
well, it might be at this point. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know how Kalvar feels, but I think Orimar assumes that even though there's clearly verbal assent that Kalvar is thinking differently, that they are philosophically on the same page here, whether that is true or not. But he says, you know, I know that this burns inside you the same way it does for me. If you truly feel it best to make sure that none of them remain alive, I don't want to put that burden on you. We will do that together.
It's more than that.
Oh?
If we abandon them, or we strike them down, complement is 35. We need 35 people to sail this ship, and they gotta come from somewhere.
Right. Well, it feels like a weird and twisted game to go through a mutiny and then take a compliment of that and then make them work alongside us anyway.
I don't think it comes from mutineers. I think we gotta offer to the people that we defeated. Yeah. That's the only way.
True. I suppose maybe their emotional sabbatical of where they need to be doesn't necessarily need to be wandering the wastes. Sometimes you can find yourself in the bottom of a bucket of soapy water or shoveling fuel into a fire. Meditative work. He laughs for long enough, hoping that someone in the room will also find humor in it and laugh with him. And when no one does, it just trails into silence.
Spit. All right, then. Captain, I hope you know that you're going to have to be making that speech.
And Oromar takes a deep breath, looks. I like there's like a small porthole out the back of the office to the outside.
I feel like we can allow big picture windows. That's what all the Hollywood movies do for Captain. Although there are portholes here because we do know Gable has shoved themselves through one of them more than one occasion.
He looks out through one and takes a deep breath, and we can see the form of him kind of take that in and out. Almost maybe reflective of that blasting into the whistle earlier, although not as extreme. And he turns round and he has the same winning smile, the same charismatic, programmed, well-taught red feather smile that he gave, that we saw when he like murdered the red feather who tried to capture him in that mutiny. And says, well, I was headhunted myself, so I suppose I know all the steps to the process.
Spit smiles. It is like the grim smile of someone that knows that somebody has difficult work ahead of them and goes, I'll set the preparations.
Gentlemen, let us do some aggressive recruitment.
And we cut back to the future. Travis, there is something that weighs in your pocket. Now, normally, Johnny, as a player, I would be asking you questions like, did you read that book or glance through that book that you picked up in the middle of the fight? And since I know the answer to that is no, based on my experience as a game master, the question that I instead have for you, Johnny, is how does Travis accidentally see a page of the book against his will? How does fate push this information irrevocably into his mind?
So you said the book is in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's looking for something else in his pockets and is just kind of tossing stuff that is like, oh, what the hell is this? Just on a table, and it just like flops open.
Oh, I like that. Let's make it the captain's table. I like, why are you searching through for something in your pockets? I like that, like, everybody's having this meeting about what are we going to do with this other ship, and you're just like, gotta get something.
I'll tell you exactly what it is. Throughout the course of the fight, Travis did get a hangnail and is looking for like an emery board, which he always keeps in his pockets.
Perfect. Yep. So yeah, Travis is like haphazardly throwing about a bunch of watches from mine. People that that's he has mine. Stolen.
That's mine. Okay, this is all mine.
Well, then why was it in my pocket?
Because you took it, because you stole it, because it's mine.
Okay, but...
And the book comes out and falls open in front of Oromar. Oromar, you can see on the page, this is a cipher for the messages that they were getting from agents of the Silver Bullet and moving back and forth between them. This page just so happens to be the last page with the last message that was sent between the ships that they received from agents of the Bullet on it. And as you read these words, ice grips your heart. As they say, long live the great King Gina. Now, what does that mean to everyone else? Nothing. But Nathan, I think you know what that means to Oromar. At least on some level. The great King Gina is something of a cultural myth for the people of Bendari, and a myth that was deeply important to Oromar. The Great King Jina is someone that helped the Bandari in the early days build their culture. Mm-hmm. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of folk tales starring the Great King Jina and his life in the early days, long before the stars fell, long before Old Bandari was Old Bandari, long before even a person sailed the seas. Was the Great King Jina and the adventures that he would have talking to the animals around Bendari, learning the lessons that helped the Bendari people eventually become the Bendari people, making the deals that made the culture of Bendari the great thing that it was. But Great King Jina also wrote the laws. The laws that helped show the Bendari people who they were. The laws that proved through the ages to guide and oversee Bendari, maybe not to the great heights of prosperity that some of the colonial states surrounding Bendari might have reached, but because of that, it was a better kind of prosperity. One where everyone who lived in Bendari had enough to eat. When folks fell ill, they were seen to and taken care of, and one that still allowed them to build the greatest ships that ever graced the seas of Sphere. The Great King Jina was someone that Orimar was obsessed with.
Yeah.
The idea of a king.
The prototypical ideal of a benevolent king. And although Orimar would never necessarily admit as such, if you knew those bits and pieces about the history, it would be almost, I think a Bandari person would be able to effortlessly connect the dots on Orimar's kind of like adoption of those myths and ideals onto themselves.
Mm.
Maybe and even a bit bold-faced. But yeah.
There are two people, to your mind, who knew about you and King Jina and the connection between you, because really, there are only two people who know enough about Bendari left to your knowledge. Mm. And those were the Bandit Queen, whom you have told of your homeland and the stories that made you into the man that you are, and Calivar.
Yeah. Orimar's body not moving is not really a surprise for the crew at hand, but the soul inside stops vibrating, really. It almost kind of shrinks down to like a pinpoint as they are introspective for a moment. Both of these outcomes, both of these potential suspects are impossible for the circumstances at hand. Absolutely impossible. There could be no way. But then, if there was somebody else out there, a theoretical third person that knew the legends, that internalized the virtues, well, one, what a coincidence to run into them. And two, if they know me and know the myths, why on earth would they stop me?
Yeah. With that information, I would, before we fully decide what we are going to do with this enemy ship, there's one more piece of information that we all as players need to know, and we will all create together. We need to know who the captain of the Silver Bullet is. So I would like for you, because knowing what we know about the Silver Bullet is a ship of snipers, they have these birds, they, you know, sabotage people's furnaces through the sails, they dress like absolute assholes. Who is this captain? I want each of you to give me one fact about the captain of the Silver Bullet, then we will name this person. And that information will be information that you kind of all know.
Mm.
I feel like mine might be a twofer, because marksman-esque, like, wears an eye patch, always ready to start sniping, and carries a toothpick around. Like, and is always, like, grotesquely fiddling with it with his tongue. Ugh. And is, like, kind of sucking at it and
This is good.
Mm. Yeah.
I was going to say that their tongue is actually annoyingly long.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. Ooh.
You know, in like old cartoons when a cowboy would like roll his own cigarette and he would like hold his tongue out to hold the rolling paper on, you know, like that's what I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yuck.
I don't know if it's necessarily prehensile, but I can see the key art of this character kind of have their tongue out like a kind of thing. And it's just too long.
I think he does whatever the equivalent of like, you know, how cowboys would roll their own cigarettes. I think he like braids his own rope or something. Whatever that equivalent would be.
Also, I feel like I'm going to amend one of mine. I feel like it's a little bit more annoying if, like, he just has an eye patch, but he never puts it down. He's just got it, like, hanging right above his, like, left eyebrow.
I mean, that is, like, one of the reasons that pirates wore eye patches, because pirates absolutely wore eye patches because they lost eyes. But even pirates with two eyes would have eye patches because if you were moving up between top deck and lower deck, moving to lower deck, if you had both of your eyes kind of fully open top deck, it would be really hard to see in the darkness below deck. So they would wear an eye patch so that when they got below deck, they could move it to the other eye and have like one eye that was kind of used to the dark and be able to move between those adjustments very evenly. So I like the idea that this captain has this eye patch because they are trying to project themselves as a working person. Like, this is somebody who's like, yeah, I do the real work. They do not do the real work.
Right.
They wear the accoutrement of someone who does the real work, but they don't actually do it.
In that vein, I like the idea of this character being like, they were very much, and the reason like why this ship is painted and why this, there's a lot of trickery and pretense. His backstory is that he was just on a merchant ship. He wasn't even the captain of a merchant ship. And then his entire crew died. And then someone discovered this kind of ghost ship out in the middle of nowhere. And they asked him, what happened? Well, what happened? Like, well, we were attacked and I fought valiantly. And I'm the only survivor. But everyone else passed away, but through my prowess, I'm a very powerful man, and I did it. And it's too bad everyone died, but I should be the captain now. Oops! But really, what happened was that everyone just got cholera or something. Like there was an illness.
Well, I think that we're learning that this is a former ship's cook who absolutely killed everyone on board the ship with bad food.
Intentionally or accidentally?
That's a question.
Because if he's a saboteur by nature,
what if he's like a Typhoid Mary type, and at first he didn't realize, and then he did, and then kept on going?
Oh, yeah. He realizes what happens and goes, I could actually take everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, nasty.
Oh, wow.
All right. What is this person's name?
I kind of want it to be gun-themed to match the name of the ship and the fact that they're all snipers, but I don't know that many things about gun. Please tell me a cool word about gun.
Hilt. Hilt, hammer, powder, Nicholas Hammer. No.
Army Hammer.
Nope.
He eats people.
Army Hammer.
What? I like the idea.
Oh, that's his name too.
Armand.
We could use Glock in there. Like it is kind of a very evocative like
Glock
name,
Winchester.
Winchester's like Winchester rifle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. If they're snipers, then I guess a rifle name makes sense.
We do have to take a history of guns course to graduate high school, so.
Huh.
Oh yeah, it's Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
No.
Okay. No. God, could you I gotta tell you, Nathan, you would probably be surprised how gun-oriented some of my education was in my history courses. Like, literally, they taught us that one of the things that allowed the wild Western period of American history to come to an end was a particular type of firearm being developed. Like, that is something that was absolutely part of my education.
With the new tech.
Instead of guns, germs, and steel, we have to read guns, guns, and guns.
Guns, guns,
we have to read guns, 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 guns too.
Yeah. And we bring it back.
The only reason I know Winchester is because of the spooky house.
The supernatural. No. Mm-hmm.
But no, I like Winchester as a name. I think that's cool.
Winchester. So Armand Winchester?
Ooh, yeah.
How snooty.
Mm-hmm. In my head, for some reason, he talks like an old-timey Shakespearean actor.
Verily, we did board thine ship.
Ian McKellen on its off hours.
Mm-hmm. Or like Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, it's Branagh, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to try for that. We'll see how close I get.
Well, James,
we've established that he's a bit of a faker. So if you can't maintain it, that's entirely within character, honestly.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much. Nathan, thank you so much.
I recently listened to the episode where you did an Italian accent for 5 seconds and then was like, no, I can't.
I remember that.
We all have limits. We can't all be superhuman, James.
He died. he died, so like that's
why. That is why
that happens.
He did the accent so bad you killed
him. Has anyone else ever done an accent so bad they killed a man? I don't think so. Hey Heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, I am so excited to tell you that this week, on Thursday, we're going to be uploading the first part of Campaign Skyjack's Azure Blues, the newest bonus content series for Campaign Skyjack's. This one picks up right on the heels of the last one, following Jolly Jack Tinkerson, played by Patrick Rothfuss, Margaret, played by myself, and Jolly Jack's second-in-command, Gerace, played by Amy Vorpal, on an all-new adventure that furthers Margaret's story and helps us learn more about the mysterious figure that is Jolly Jack. This series is going to be 6 parts long, and I think we're posting it every other week, starting next Thursday. I'm so excited with the way this turned out. It was edited by our very own Allie Grauer, and the performances everyone delivered are amazing. You have been pounding at the door for more Margaret content, and now you have it. So get ready on Thursday for a fun listen, and I hope you enjoy. That bonus content is, of course, available thanks to our backers on Patreon. It's not just the bonus content, though. Those Patreon backers also help us make this show that you're listening to right now. And before we get back to the episode, I want to take a quick moment and thank some of them. Sarah Yoshi, thank you. Hey Flick, thank you so much. Madalie Bull, thank you. Schneefink, thank you so much. Kalia, thank you very much. Kelly Shepherd, thank you. Joy Rideau, thank you very much. Wassamonkey, thank you. Jacob McGarry, thank you very much. Kurtz Asmi, thank you so much. Matthew Meenigan, thank you. Ayane Katz, thank you so much. Brian Hurt or Brian Hirt, thank you so much. Mike, thank you very much. John, thank you. Andy R, thank you so much. Tony Ner, thank you. Brett Voles, thank you so much. Jess Brooks, thank you very much. Peter Ehlers, thank you. Alexander Criswell, thank you so much. And David Burns, thank you very much. Thanks again to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Thanks to all of you, we're not only able to make this show, but make bonus content for this show. And listener, if you're out there thinking, I would like to listen to some of that bonus content, then worry not. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to be a supporter for $5 a month or more. That gets you access to that bonus content and helps you join this list of names. And the more support we get, the more we can do cool stuff like Azure Blues.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Now then, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. Great. So that is, you know, of Captain Armand Winchester, the things that you know about his reputation is that he projects airs is a lot of what he does. The artifice is so much entwined with who he is and what he does. There is definitely going to be in your negotiation like a lot of brinksmanship, I think is probably the best way to put it. Mm. Like he's going to be trying to claim larger stakes than he has. And that is going to be the hurdle that you have to overcome. Mm, and also, you kind of have to decide now how severely you are going to deal with all of this. You have to consider the facts that, like, yeah, this was a terrible crime perpetrated against the Uhuru. At the end of the day, you still need to be able to have the respect of your crew and yourself. There's a lot riding on how you decide to handle this. And you've handled complicated situations in the past, and you have your counsel around you to grant their advice or opinion.
Yes. So, and I think out of character as well, I am very happy to take on suggestions on how to handle this sort of thing. First things first, though, Oromar, still with one side of himself battered and bloody, not all of the blood his, was like, I need to conceal my current circumstances. And there's like a wardrobe, because, you know, when he was alive, he had his vestments available. And he rummages around inside and pulls out an asymmetrical cape. Very, very regal looking. It's purple.
Oh, I love it.
Love it.
With a very fancy looking clasp that sits in the middle of the chest. And turns to Gable and is like, if you wouldn't mind assisting.
Gable gets the cape over Oromar, covers up, accidentally like hits himself on the bone. Ow, sorry.
Yeah, it sucks to touch. This very feels much like the outside of a body. This very much feels like the inside of a body on the outside.
There shouldn't be this glistening
meat available to the open air.
Can we get a clean take of it sucks to touch?
Yeah, please just a quick and clean, so that for the audio, we just want to make sure that we got it. It sucks to touch.
It sucks to touch.
So Tyler stepped on you a little bit there. So we get a clean.
It sucks to touch.
Thank you.
Here we go.
Yes.
Cool.
Nice. Awesome.
Thank you.
I could read that a couple of different ways if that would be suitable.
Do a fun one.
We got it.
Yeah, have fun with it, please. Yeah.
It sucks to touch.
Oh, that's so fun. Thank you. Thank you for making me.
Nice.
I'll be invoicing you for recording tomorrow. Thank you.
Oh, for the audition is unpaid. I'm sorry. Gable puts the cape on and says, okay, you're going to want to, it will catch. So just kind of like fling it. They tie a little sailor's knot on the other side, like a fancy one, so it looks like a fun little bolo tie. You know, we could also could also just like take a little bit more from Travis if you wanted to fix it. Just a little.
Yeah. Orma looks at Travis and is like, I could restore my arm, but it might be a tax on you. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's okay. Travis, you're fine with it.
I mean, how much of a tax if you were to give it a numeric value?
Just do it.
Orma genuinely thinks in his head for a second, like, what's the sign language for imaginary number? Like, I. Because he has no idea. All he does in response to that in terms of a numerical value, he just shrugs with one shoulder at you.
Well, I mean,
it's fine if you don't.
What does happen if I get all the way down on strain?
You would be very tired. Oh. Like, people can pass out, you know? Mm.
So I could potentially take a nap and not have to deal with any of this?
No, it would, I would throw you, Johnny O'Mara, would then be doing a dream sequence scene with me. is what
you don't want that. Yeah. All right, just leave it. Just leave it.
Yeah, I think it's actually an interesting piece of drama if Orma still has the sword arm.
Are we sure we don't want to just randomly, through happenstance and different players' choices, create a brand new wild plot element for Travis? Because
every time
we kind of do it every arc.
Every time now, his strain gets to zero, it's like, and he starts to dream. It's like in Beetlejuice when they leave the house.
I know that I think in talking with James, if Orimar hits zero strain, the soul falls out of the body. So, yes. Which is an interesting thing I might want to explore at some point. Yeah. But
when I'm at zero strain, it just goes into my wounds and then I'm fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're Gable.
Yeah. You're a cool, very strong angel himbo, thembo. But I wish I had the physical constitution therein. But,
in my opinion, I think the last time we crashed a ship and destroyed all of the members of the crew inside, it worked out pretty good. The civility just being swallowed into the sea, we got it handled the problem. It added to the collective Uhuru esteem and fear. Mm. And then we didn't have to talk to anyone. And I'd love to
Arma signs back like, I faintly remember that.
Breath
made
there.
Me jump down several floors and my legs snapped in two. Mm-hmm.
That's like not a rag doll. Memories. So,
yeah. Well, the face remains impassive. You get an air of like indignance, I think. You know, don't treat my body like a crash test dummy. Don't. That's my decision to make, Dref Wormwood. Mm.
So that's my opinion. But then again, I... As far as I know, this is a very low stakes situation because the fight never came to me. Mm. I just had a good time with my friends on the deck.
Mr. Winchester clearly needs to see my face in person. Such a letter of invitation this was.
Jonnet, how are you feeling? Gable kind of like offhandedly almost like mentioned the idea of leaving this other crew to die. You know what you did to those sails. You know that they're probably not going to be able to repair that, certainly before they run out of fuel and drop into this lake. And you've seen the seals that are around here.
I also think that, Jonnet, at this point, the news of our casualties during this fight has made its way to Jonnet. And for what it's worth, Jonnet does not feel remorse about the idea of potentially leaving these folks to like the consequences that they brought upon themselves. They crossed the Uhuru. Like, and I think he's just overall dizzy from the everything that just happened. But I don't think he bats an eye at the notion of letting them get the fate that they've asked for.
I think that's why Gable is advocating for it too. Like, they killed two of our people. They attempted a mutiny. We owe them literally nothing. Less than nothing.
Hmm.
Jonnet kind of like shakes off the take the energy from Travis. And just kind of settles into if slurp his strain. But I was like, we don't owe them anything. But if you want to talk to them, then let's board that ship.
Aramar thinks, but is maybe a little too tired to say, you know, back in my day, if you wanted to court a person, you invited them out to a dinner and a dance, not mutinying the ship. Flirting people, like, is romance dead? He internalizes as he instead signs to the rest of the crew. Yes, I would like to speak to Mr. Winchester. It doesn't have to be long, but this is clearly what they want.
Then I think we cut to a shot of the Uhuru and the Silver Bullet docking together. There are white flags flying around the Silver Bullet, clearly indicating their surrender. The Uhuru, limping as it is, I think everyone on both ships is in the middle of repairs right now. We can see a large number of crew have made their way to the envelope canopy on the Silver Bullet, trying to find a way to patch the massive line, the massive streak hole that Jonnet tore in that envelope.
As like they're making their approach and the docking process is happening, we see like an insert of people like trying to patch this this sail, and then we see like the shot gets dirty with Jonnet's shoulder, and then we flip around to see Jonnet looking at them, and he's just got like a very satisfied smirk on his face.
Yeah, seeing your handiwork. You dealt a major blow. That they are going to be repairing this for a long time if they manage to do it at all. The Uhuru doesn't look wonderful right now. It is still running on as heavy a burn as it can, as there is only one of the furnaces that is fully active. The stacks for the main and rear furnace are both being adjusted. They have massive holes torn in them. So that iron is being patched over with leather. Until you can reach a port, you are probably going to be dealing with inefficient furnaces there. Having only the four furnace to burn means that the ship is going to be moving slowly. That's on top of the line work that needs to be done and all the guide sails. It's just gonna be a piece of work. Not only that, but everybody is kind of dreading the prospect of someone is going to draw the short straw on duty and have to scrape the bodies out of the envelope order to make sure that there are no other unforeseen problems that pop up. But we can see the faces of the crew of the Uhuru around the ship. They are stony and aggrieved. None more than the crew members who are currently working the gangplank, as normally those two who raise and lower the gangplank are Daisy and Fuentes. And only Fuentes remains, and they are in no condition to be working right now. But the grapple lines are cast and caught, the ships are drawn together, and a procession is made. A question for Orimar, on whose ship are you meeting?
We're walking over to theirs, because if nothing else, the moment the likes of Mr. Winchester setting foot on the Uhuru, regardless of what Orimar says or does, he could not guarantee his safety. I think at this point, if anybody from the Silver Bullet decided to set foot on the Uhuru, it would be considering their lives forfeit. So, yeah, Orimar takes the procession of the council. And I think Orimar takes Spit as well.
All right.
Again, a mirroring of having that previous time in their past where they had to go and speak to another ship that decided that they wanted to be part of a mutiny and failed, and how we had to handle that on the other side. Orimar recalls such a moment and calls for Spit and says to Spit off camera, "It seems we must have this conversation once more."
Spit nods. "I'm at your side as always."
"Thank you very much, old friend."
So there is a procession from the Uhuru, and we can see the massive crew of the Uhuru. Like, hostilities are down right now. Nobody is expecting a fight, but they are prepared for it. Those crew who are remaining aboard the Uhuru are standing casually around muskets, making sure that they are clean and ready, and some of them perhaps even loaded. The rest of the crew, like, is boarding down to, like, make a line for the captain to prepare the way for Orimar. They have been in this situation many times before. The Uhuru crew would never be foolish enough to allow their captain aboard another ship to simply be kidnapped and sent into another standoff, especially for a ship whose reputation lies so much with deception.
And now, if everybody else is also okay with this, can we all be dressed in black? We are already grieving.
I love the idea of bringing out funeral clothes with the only splash of color being this purple cape. You are met on the deck by the captain and his council. You can see Winchester enforces aboard his ship a uniforms of sort. You know, everybody is wearing these blue shirts with the white cuffs, and him having the most fantastic version of it. It is a bizarre, like, it's halfway between like a blazer and like a pirate coat. You know, it's all very businessy. There are lots of gold details and whatnot along it. He also has a toothpick in his mouth, and it is, of course, a jewel-encrusted toothpick.
That's so easy to lose.
"Well met, Orimar Vale."
Orimar signs back, "Please excuse me. I don't want to deign using my voice with you."
And with that, I think, like, there is a nervous laughter that comes from Armand Winchester. He is quickly backed up by his council, definitely putting on a show for the crew that remains on his deck. "Well, then perhaps I can offer you libations." And he gestures towards his own captain's quarters. He is making an offer to have these negotiations be conducted in private. This is something that you, as the captain at advantage in this parlay, can refuse if you would desire to.
Orimar says, "I would rather drink river water." Woo!
A stony sort of grim atmosphere falls around this. They were not expecting this negotiation to go well by any stretch of the imagination, but this is about as poor as anything can go. Nonetheless, he is a captain. Even if he is not the captain that Orimar Vale is, Armand is someone who has led his crew through difficult situations. "Then let your terms be known, Orimar Vale."
"We require both repairs and we require funeral cost managed. We have lost members of our crew. You are responsible, and therefore it is only apt that you cover what needs to be covered."
I think Armand nods. "'Tis a fair request. I request safety for my crew."
Unless you're saying your crew are made of gold, I have no interest in them.
Orimar Vale, you have a reputation for being ruthless. I knew that. I knew that before we were sent to collect your flag. But your reputation is to have that ruthlessness towards the feather. You are a corsair, same as I. Your men, corsairs, same as mine. We fly under similar flags. Was nothing personal.
Absolutely. If you wanted to make this a personal matter, this conversation would be going very... He glances to his left arm covered by the cape differently.
I can see we are at disadvantage. That's true. But if you're proposing that I take action, that would lead to the certain demise of everyone aboard this ship. I need only raise a hand, and we'd fight to our last. And the number of crew that you'd be burying, it'd be considerable more, now wouldn't it?
Would you really throw the lives of your crew away so frivolously?
You've already said that you wish to throw them away. And I'd rather them die on their feet against blades than in the water against seals. And I think they'd all agree. And with that, there is a hearty eye that comes from each and every member of the Silver Bullet crew. So again, safety for my crew.
So you would rather us offer a hand of benevolence, raise you from the pit that you found yourselves in?
Same thing I'd expect you'd be offering if this had gone different.
It didn't, though.
With that, I mean, we've got a villainous pirate here. We've got a 15-year-old who spoke up out of turn. He goes, I, and you might be the Star Watcher, isn't it?
That I am. I'm also the one that grounded your ship.
His eyes rise up. Well, we were wondering how you managed to pull that off. Skilled must you be. You might have a long career ahead of you, lad. But there are a few things that you need to consider. Every decision that you make in these skies, it leaves a mark. And if you want to be the sort of man who doesn't parlay once hostilities have gone down, people tend to remember that. All need be is one or two souls make it away from this ship and find their way to port. And then, should the Uhuru ever fall upon ill luck against an opponent that doesn't fly a feather's flag, then you might all find yourself being gripped by the river. And that's not something I'd wish on anyone. So if you wish to be captain, remember that. And remember the things that all these captains do here today. Yes, I ask for benevolence, if you'd have me put it that way. But I would never ask such a thing without offering you something in return. I've made my threat, and I've made my stakes there clear. Should you decide to leave us in a pit from which we can't raise ourselves, we'd rather face steel and fire than water. But, as I said, I was sent to take your flag, and I'd be willing to part with that information for the consideration of the safety of McCrew.
It's the Red Feathers. It's the Red Feathers. The Red Feathers want the flag. That's not useful information.
With all due respect, miss... Gable is dressing more femme.
Yes.
So, with all due respect, miss, that ain't it. The Red Feathers don't deal with corsairs. And if the Silver Bullet's one thing, it's a corsair ship. But we do deal.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and... 6-1 since that matters.
And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Gable whispers, there are only like 3 other people that it could be. I feel like we can narrow it down. Context clues. I don't think we need to get that from him.
Hmm. We should ask for their general height.
Like, are they blonde? Are they, was, you know.
And then John, also to the captain, sorry for kind of talking out of my breath right there.
Is this whispering bad?
I was using, that.
Orimar like bristles, like you feel his hair start to move and you're like,
Okay, we're gonna spit.
Okay, yeah.
Orimar has to be such a strong, charismatic person. And in this moment, I don't know how strong and charismatic I am being.
You're crushing it.
Yeah, Orimar, I think they're in this moment of stillness with not too much of the body to have to move. Orimar manages a smile, and it takes time. And I think the time to make that smile emerge is what gives it weight.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, I really like the idea that Orimar has just not been playing around with facial expressions.
Been stony-faced because it's hard. it's a lot of very small, fine movement when moving the body is so much easier.
And we know that Dref programmed them in, but like it's so much more efficient to communicate exactly through hand sign than it would be through facial expressions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like the captain's winning smile is easy. This smile is more of a kind of like, I think Jonnet actually, I think, recognizes the kind of poses from having attended a sermon of the Church of the Fallen God, that kind of like, sheep, come into my arms, for you have found salvation, kind of smile that slowly comes across his face. Salvation can be yours. We do have the resources. The damage you have taken to your ship is not quite the damage we have taken unto ours. We are in a position to offer you some tools to be able to get yourself back into shape. And likewise, you have some tools that we can use.
Now that's the sort of conversation that I am much more agreeable to.
But I do need an assent from you beyond just words. Kneel to me as your king, and the benevolence shall be provided.
Johnny, while this intense-ass scene is happening, just seeing you slowly with your Mike's Hard Lemonade slushy.
I'm just enjoying the show, baby.
I'm only regretting that I don't have one.
I'll tell you, it's a treat. It's a real treat.
I'm definitely going to need a stiff drink after this. Good gosh.
Did you pour out the Mike's Hard and then put it in the freezer?
Mm-hmm. I pour it into a bag.
So we return once again to the long line of prospective applicants in front of the skyship Uhuru. We see now one person coming off the line approaching the audition table. Johnny, would you like to describe this person for us?
Yeah, this person is is this person allowed to exist in their state in this universe?
I think in the space of Dear Uhuru, certainly.
The space, you say. this person is about 6 feet tall, got big old bug eyes, a little green snoot, wearing an eye patch over one of those eyes, and a really lovely, oh gosh, you know what's really fun now is that hair is different than it used to be. So this is certainly a wig with a middle part.
There we go. Very trendy.
Yeah. Mm. And, you know, an all black space jumpsuit.
All right. So they
and place one, and one hand that's a robot hand.
Oh, wow.
So many questions. Thank you for this resume. What's your name?
Lena Gilo from the Minok.
Do not speak to this demon. I've it never says seen here such on, a creature.
On your resume that your name is Rice Krispy.
Right, yeah. My name, so my name is Lena Gila. I'm from the ship, the Minok. But right now, we can all assume my name is Rice Krispy. So from here on out, name, Lena Gila, is Rice Krispy.
So okay. Starting now. So, okay, Rice.
Mr. Krispy.
Rice, talking to you.
Oh,
Rice, you keep looking away.
Me, yeah. Right. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay. So, what is a Minok?
Apparently, it's a ship. Which my first question then is, why are you trying to work on our ship if you already got one?
Well, funny story. Look, a lot has happened in the past few years. For one, no one knows how to fix the ship. It's in a state, I've got to say. And I can't be the only one doing dishes on the ship anymore. So there are dirty dishes everywhere, and I refuse to do them.
So not an engineer ticks a box on an
engineer. You know, not a funny good roommate.
You say that because I think legally I am an engineer.
Okay.
But... I think I'm a fine engineer, but sometimes you find other passions in life, you know?
It's so interesting. It seems like you're rediscovering yourself as you speak to us, which is an interesting psychological
I feel
endeavor.
Like
a mental
I've
re-rolling,
been
maybe.
Asleep for years, and maybe I've just woken up from a sleep that was a long time.
Well, you are looking a little green under the collar.
Above the collar, for that matter.
You're green.
Also, you're a bug, and that's freaking me out. That's really freaking me out.
It's not polite to stare, Gabe.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, then how about this? Can I call you Rice?
Why would you?
That's you.
Oh, it's, right. Yes, you can, of course.
Okay, if this happens two more times, I'm just going to go back to Lena Gilo.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine too.
I just want to know, so you are or were an engineer, you're not really feeling it right now, and you're kind of like doing new stuff. You got to have a job on the ship. You got to have a job on the Uhuru, all right? I don't know how they do things on the Minok, but on the Uhuru, if you're on here, you do a job. So okay, was that job that you'd like to have?
I'll tell you what, I am great. I'm a great cook and I'm a better killer and I love rules. So I hope you guys have a lot of rules for your ship. If there's a lot of rules and procedure, I'm on board.
Well, it's funny. We do actually have a member on our ship who sounds strangely like you, funnily enough. I couldn't think
but,
why.
But
they are not particularly into rules and we are looking to replace them, so...
What dynamic traits that these two folks seem to have. So different from each other and yet so alike. Almost as if they're two halves
seems like
of
the
same
amount
hole.
Of effort is put into both.
It's just kind of the baseline that you bring. And like, anything on top of that is you should cherish it.
It's just like kind of one off.
I am doing my best, and so help me, if that's not good enough for you, I will end.
Boy, these voices really are similar, aren't
but
they?
But different.
Oh, look, it appears that the sun is going down outside.
Is that a thing that I forgot?
No.
No, it's your new man.
No, it's
your new man. Doesn't.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not here.
Where is he? Where is he? By the way,
he's not on the council, so he shouldn't be bothered to show up to council things.
That's fair.
You seem very well aware of our ex council members' duties at the moment, Rice. Well, Gilo.
Councils are very big politically where I come from too. So.
We cut over to the tavern where Travis is currently drinking now in his human form that the sun has gone down.
Okay, usually when you say next round of drinks is on me, it means you pay for the drinks.
No, the next round of drinks is on me. I'll be drinking the next round of drinks.
What would you say? It's a round of drinks. It's assumed in the fact that you're getting drinks that's what round means. It doesn't mean you don't need to say on me. On me means you're paying.
It's a round of drinks because the glass is round.
Okay, everybody, I have a round of mead. And who's going to be picking the tab on this one?
That would be him.
No. I'm drinking. He will be picking up the tab.
Nope. He said. Next round of drinks is on me.
Okay, all right. I'm going to have to ask you guys to stop fucking around. Who's going to pay this tab?
Okay, I'll be honest with you. I know what the next round of drinks is on me means. I was just seeing if I could, have a little fun with you, and apparently not. He'll be getting the drinks.
We cut back to the audition table. Okay, it says here on your resume under special skills that you're a magician.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay. What school of magic here on do your you resume, particularly prefer? Is it a necromantic? Is it a pyromancy?
No, like sleight of hand.
You can remove your hand?
Well, I can do that.
You mean
too,
like this?
And Aramar
just pulls his own. Oh.
You too. Lenik holds the robot hand up to like high five Oromar's.
The hand separately, like the thing just kind of like leaps off Jonet's shoulder and gives an air high five.
Oh, that is great. And now, is that, but that's not a robot hand.
Huh. What's a robot?
Oh, some automaton bullshit, whatever. a clockwork. Yeah.
So, all right. Okay. So you're here, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you're here.
We just need to accept that this is.
We just need to accept that you're here. Obviously, we can't hire you because,
the implications.
Reasons and implications and stuff.
I think it would make people too happy.
But I think that we have to. This is a good discussion point to like check in mentally. How do you feel? Do you feel like. Is everything good with you? Or.
Gable
is a licensed therapist,
you
realize.
This is so how are you feeling?
Well, they're working on their license. For a while.
I've read the book and
you read the back cover of the book.
I've read the back cover of the book. So, Lenik or Mr. Crispy, if anyone wanted to know, how's it hanging?
I've had my ups and downs. I've been going through a bit of a rough patch lately. My son just left home to go to college. So that's been tough. So I'm kind of like an empty nester.
We cut to a Red Feather Military Academy where we see a hallway where the lights are like kind of flickering on and off. And there is a very like ruffled, like looking Red Feather soldier crawling on their hands and knees, breathing with like hatched breath. And then the light flickers on and you can see a 400-pound Vornskier behind them. And then the light flickers off and we just hear a scream. And then we cut back to the audition table.
But he writes a lot, so that's nice. But it's just
for kids to grow up, yeah.
it's so hard to be, you know, I thought it was hard being a single mom, but it's even harder being a mom that's all alone.
An empty nester. Yeah. Okay. Well,
if again, we can't let you on.
Absolutely.
The no ship. Way.
Again, it would break worlds. And I think we would have to pay one of our crew members double to be both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to work.
I don't think legally that can be justified.
Hey. Oh, actually, wait a minute. I think if we all just reprise the characters that we have been doing, we could. Yeah, we would have to be paid extra.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, if that's the case, then I deserve some back pay because I was pulling double duty for a while.
That's fair. Fair commentary.
Is that because you didn't change much?
maybe Nemo would have been a little more fun to be around had he been incentivized financially. Yeah.
I'm emotionally moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
From this.
I feel like Liz. I feel like you're alone. Well, this is one of the recent submissions.
It's just. I appreciate where all of this came from. I respect it.
Same.
But I also feel that when you are here, it becomes increasingly obvious that you are just you again.
But a little different.
But a little different. But also kind of the same.
Well, also who could remember?
Okay, now it's really coming through.
I remember what happened so a long time ago in a galaxy, galaxy far, far, far away. Yeah. Like I said, it feels as if I've been sleeping for so long and I've awoken and I'm still maybe in a little bit of a dream.
How is it possible that I'm the captain of a ship and still somehow feel like a fifth wheel?
I'm sorry. Look, I'll go back to my ship. One more thing that I do have to say before I leave though is, you know, it was great talking to all of you. And I'm not just so sad and lonely because my son went off to college, but canonically everyone else on my ship did die of terminal diarrhea. So I do have to be.
I'm so sorry.
All right, Lenik, we brought the car around. It's time to go. It's time to go home.
Wait a minute.
This isn't a dance recital.
What? No, I'm coming.
This is an audition to join another ship.
What are you talking about?
Are you joining another ship?
Apparently not.
Is this about the dishes that you won't clean up?
No, it's about the dishes that you won't clean up.
It's not my job to clean the dishes.
Oh, so
it's your job to clean the dishes.
To the dishes?
Wait a minute.
You are cleaning those dishes, Lena.
Our ship, and you're on the port. You're so far away. Just go yell at each other in front of each other.
Go,
Lena, come over here to yell at me.
Okay, I'm coming, CT-1777, a different clone, because CT-1776 died of terminal diarrhea, just like everyone else on the ship.
Calling me different names to tease me. You know I don't like it.
As far as I know, this is a different man who the other one did die of terminal diarrhea, as far as I'm concerned.
I didn't remember enough to know that they were CT-7-evident. I didn't know Bacta had one.
I'll be honest with you, I'm shocked. That I remembered it too.
That like that flowed out of your like mouth so fluidly.
You know how in Who Framed Roger Rabbit he's able to get out of the handcuffs when it's funny? I think that's how my memory works.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com, like All My Fantasy Children. All My Fantasy Children is a character creation, world building, and storytelling podcast powered by you. Each week, best friends Aaron Catano-Saez and Jeff Stormer take a listener-submitted prompt and, using some of their favorite tabletop RPGs, create an original fantasy character. Along the way, they populate a shared universe one story at a time. They share laughs, stories, and verbal hugs along the way. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, Neo Scum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
To strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.